You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The Great Lakes are getting warmer, and that's giving environmental and water scientists a lot to think about. Aaron Fisk is one of those scientists. Aaron's a professor with the Great Lakes Institute for Environmental Research at the University of Windsor. Aaron Fisk, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So Canada collects data and records temperatures in the Great Lakes. The United States does the very same thing. And that data is showing that water temps are up this year. For example, I know Lake Michigan's summer surface temp is up about 3 degrees since 1980. Is that significant?
Yeah, I think it's very significant. I mean, you have to be careful because we definitely see the variation year to year, and some summers are a little bit warmer. It's the magnitude of the difference that we're seeing that has scientists concerned about what's going on. I mean, we didn't just see it in Lake Michigan. We saw it in Lake Huron and Lake Ontario as well.
Are we seeing it really throughout the Great Lakes?
Yeah, so if you look at long-term trends, from about the 50s, early 60s, we see a warming trend in all the lakes. It varies by lake. Superior seems to be warming the most or the quickest, and that fits global trends. What we tend to see is that increasing temperatures around the globe get higher or more significant as you move towards the poles. Now, it varies, of course, a little bit because there's regional differences, but as a trend, as you go further north toward the poles, the Earth is warming quicker.
And that is something that should keep people up at night.
So I'm a scientist and I do research, and we have to keep our objectivity, and we're supposed to just be doing research, and we have to be careful about, you know, being an environmentalist and advocating for these kinds of things. But frankly, yeah, I mean, I'm an optimist and I believe in our ability to try to fix things in that, but I'm worried and I'm pessimistic. And, you know, again, scientists were kind of trained not to sort of, you know, give opinions and stuff, and most scientists are leery to say things like, yeah, I'm worried. But, you know, I have lots, obviously, of scientist friends, and when you're sitting around talking with them, if they're going to be honest with you, we're all worried. You know, the changes that we're seeing in the marine environment and trends of fish populations, both in the Great Lakes and in marine environments, things that are happening terrestrially, the world is rapidly changing right now.
Well, I mean, even though science is about hypothesizing and observing and recording and analyzing and data and results, scientists like you have emotions and you have feelings. And you're in this kind of work because you care about the Great Lakes. Is there a concern that this is accelerating, that this warming trend is kind of like a snowball going downhill, picking up steam?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I mean, you know, if you go back and look at some of the models, even from the 60s and 70s, which, you know, tried to predict changes in temperature and precipitation, those models worked really, really well. What we're continuing to hear, and as they add new data to these models and make these models better, is the timelines to significant changes in the environment are becoming shorter and shorter. And I think the one that's maybe most people have heard about and maybe the easiest to visualize is the ice cover in the Arctic Ocean. So 15 years ago, when I was teaching this at the University of Georgia, you know, they were talking about the Arctic Ocean being ice-free, and I may not get these dates exactly right, but like 2100, you know, 10 years ago it was 2070, you know, now they're saying, you know, we could see an ice-free summer in the Arctic as early as 2030 or sooner. So things are starting to accelerate, and things happen that we don't quite anticipate are going to happen, and you don't have them in the model, and those kinds of things are happening more and more and more. So it is accelerating based on the data.
I'm speaking with Aaron Fisk, who's a professor with the Great Lakes Institute for Environmental Research at the University of Windsor, as we talk about the warming of the Great Lakes. So, Aaron, what could this mean for the health of the lakes?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, these lakes have been around for, you know, 12,000, 14,000 years since the last ice age. I mean, they've evolved, and they've had fairly consistent temperatures over that time. So the species that you see there, the processes that go on in the system, the nutrients that come in and stuff, have developed over a long time period. Now, we've affected them, like nutrient addition and stuff like that, but it's the pace of change of temperature which is hard, so it doesn't really give the ecosystem or species time to really adapt. Some species are going to benefit a little bit from the temperature increase if they're a warmer water species, although there's some indication maybe the warmer water species might be the most vulnerable. But it really is going to affect the timing of reproduction by fish. It's going to affect where fish are spending their time. It's going to affect energy flows. So temperature is a really important driver of ecosystem processes and food web structure. You change the temperature, you change the system. And the question is can these systems adapt enough and maintain some integrity? And that's the concern.
And I'm surprised to hear you say that the warmer temperature species might be more affected by the warmer water.
This is something we've just recently been talking about. I mean, if you're a fish species that can't tolerate the cold water, it's more a hypothesis, and we need to do some work on it. But, you know, we have a thermocline in the lakes, and so below that thermocline, it stays pretty cool, you know, long term. And we expect cold water at the bottom of the lakes to persist even as the globe starts to warm. So the surface temperatures are the ones that are going to warm. If I'm a fish or an invertebrate that can't tolerate the colder temperatures and has to stay above the thermocline, if it's warming at the surface, I may have no place to go. So things like lake trout, which like cold water, if it gets really warm at the surface, then, you know, that fish can go deep and avoid those warm temperatures. Now, it's going to have implications with regards to its feeding and how it grows and metabolism, but some of the warmer species that may not be able to find that refugia may get hit harder. So it's just an hypothesis that's starting to form. And again, I think it, you know, and of course we could be wrong because that's why you do science. We don't know the answers. But, I mean, I think that might be a potential, you know, consequence that was not maybe anticipated. So that's what makes it kind of hard to think about what may potentially happen. I mean, we can guess and think of models and what we know and make good educated guesses, but there's always surprises.
And here we are in the here and now. And those of us who remember the 70s when Lake Erie was nearly dead, we remember it was revived because of action. Is there anything that any of us listening to you talk right now can do about this?
So that's a great question, and I agree. The Great Lakes went through some really hard times in the 50s, 60s, and 70s with the dead fish on the shore and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, we did make changes there, but, you know, what was going on there was really mainly because of the basin itself. So it was us putting nutrients into the lake and into the Great Lakes Basin. I think the problem with climate change, or I don't think it is, it is the problem with climate change, is it's a global phenomenon. So we can get our act together in the Great Lakes Basin with regards to fossil fuel emissions. The rest of the world has to as well. So it's kind of an immovable force moving through the Great Lakes. So we have to act globally. We can't really act regionally and make a difference in this. And that, I think, is the thing that is depressing and worrisome and I think makes people pessimistic. I also think what it does is I think people more so than ever know that climate change is occurring or believe it's occurring and that it's going to have negative impacts, but people just don't know what to do. And I think people figure there's not much they can do. And so I think people are ignoring it. I teach a first year course and I was asking the students stuff the first day about climate change and are they worried? And this only one kid in the class put up his hand and said he's not worried. And that's exactly what he answered. He said, look, I think we're going to have changes and things are going to get ugly. I can't do anything about it. I'm not going to worry about it.
Which doesn't seem real satisfying.
No, and it isn't satisfying. And it's, but, you know, this is the thing is, you know, you can think that you're going to go out and buy a Tesla and, you know, you're only going to be using electricity to drive your car around. Well, unfortunately, that electricity is probably coming from a coal fire burning power plant or even oil. Also, it takes a lot of energy and effort to build that Tesla and to get that iron out of the ground. It is extremely difficult for us to live carbon neutral. And we have to do it immediately, and it can't be the individual citizen. It has to be country and globally decided on. And there's a lot of people, and I'm afraid I might fall into this category, is we are very far along this path. Even if we became carbon neutral right now, the momentum is there, and it's going to be decades, if not centuries, before, you know, things could go back to something sort of pre-industrial or back to a level of CO2 in the environment that wouldn't be as destructive as I think it's going to be. Boy, that's negative, eh?
Man, I'll tell you what, though, Aaron. I think you're reflecting what a lot of folks think about every time you hear the phrase proliferation of greenhouse gases.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, maybe we're wrong about this stuff, but I personally don't want to risk the future. I don't want to risk the future for my kids. You know, I hope to live another 50 or 60 years, and I think we're already living with climate change. And yeah, I think it's costing us money, and I think it's affecting the quality of life that we're living.
Aaron Fisk is a professor and the Canada Research Chair at the Great Lakes Institute for Environmental Research at the University of Windsor. Aaron, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.